Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today's guests are physio Bradley Skeynes, who's here to discuss diminished training load, running in isolation, and how to approach running races. Plus, I spoke to Kevin Betts from virtual run club Run Things about how clubs like his are helping to offer runners a sense of community during the current crisis.
Oh, good stuff. How are you, Rick?
I'm feeling happy and energised, Ben, and do you know why?
I don't.
Because I've just done the Joe Wicks PE class, 9 a.m. this morning. fair play to Joe Wicks. You know, he's providing an amazing service, isn't he, during difficult times. And it's, you know, I think actually the exercises that he is suggesting are really good fun. There was one this morning called the kangaroo hops, which is sort of sideways jumping, which actually was, I think if you were sort of, you know, a child of any age, was a good laugh.
Yeah, I mean, I think that previous to everyone being in isolation and the sort of lockdown mentality, I think it was happening and it was going under the radar a bit because there was an abundance of stuff that people could just do. And I kind of think that he was doing great stuff with getting kids moving. And I think that was phenomenal. You know, what he's done has been phenomenal with that. But it was kind of almost a bit like he was, I don't know, kind of almost like a Jamie Oliver doing well, doing a bit of social good, but kind of like also everyone was a bit like, yeah, sure, whatever. Now, savior of the population, getting everyone moving.
Yeah, you're right. He's risen to the challenge, isn't he? One thing I would say, mate, just my only minor complaint, and I say he's doing a great job. He's very into talking about the amount of viewers he wants to get. So he's like, this morning he was like, are we going to get a million? Are we going to get a million? And like a lot of chat around that. And I thought, can you imagine if we did that? Imagine if we were like, look, last week, you know, we had, say, 4 listeners last week.
Go on, 8.
Wouldn't it be amazing, Ben, if we could just get 5 listeners? I mean, that's a kind of marketing chat, isn't it? It's not interesting content,
yeah,
I wouldn't say.
No, it's true. I think that the thing is, he's probably now, I know that YouTube views and like you get like some videos have got an extraordinary number of views. So you kind of like it pales in comparison if you're sort of talking about like a music video, which has a billion watches or something, you know. Mm. But I guess like knowing that you've had a million views of an exercise video, I mean, that's also TV numbers, isn't it? Like there's probably TV shows that go out that do worse than that. So I can see where, I mean, yeah, obviously it just sounds like he's promoting like his own show, which is all well and good. But I guess if he asks for more numbers, it means more people are doing it.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And like I say, I think it's an amazing thing he's offering. And yeah, it's free, isn't it? Free to do. How are you, Ben? Rumours are that you could be seen using a foam roller in ways that, I mean, almost defy the imagination.
Logic.
Logic, yeah.
Well, you know, Rick, I think that in these testing times, it really forces us all to adapt and survive. I was just having a good old fashioned foam roll, and then I can't remember how it came about. I think I started doing a sit up holding it or something, and I went, hey, there's room to improve on this. So yeah, I had a think, and if anyone hasn't seen it yet, head over to the Runners World UK Instagram account, and there's 9 moves using a foam roller which don't involve rolling around on it.
It's just
maybe one.
It's incredible.
Is,
I think you've turned foam rolling on its head. You're a pioneer.
Well, that's,
you're absolutely pioneer.
It's good to know. But you know, it's interesting. I think this is the thing that like there's so much you sort of get stuck in a loop of what you can do and what your exercise should be and all that sort of stuff. When, you know, there's tools and stuff that we all have as runners. And I think the foam roller was why it was a good one to choose, because it's kind of something that everyone has normally as a runner. But, you know, like, and we'll be doing some more. We're going to do ones on with just resistance bands and stuff like that. But, you know, the household chair, the humble household chair, I'm sure there's thousands of exercises we can do with that. So we'll look into it.
Sounds good. Well, I was listening to the Today programme today on Radio 4, and there was a chat, but it discussed, it's only about 5 minutes, but it talked about the growing tension between joggers and dog walkers. And Justin Webb, the presenter, said, and this is a quote, he said, "Anyone who's been to a park recently, and that's more people than usual, of course, will know that there's a tension building up in parks across the country between joggers and dog walkers. Joggers are being accused of being unhygienic, coming too close as they pound the paths, and dog walkers are perhaps often in the way, and maybe even out more than once a day as well." And right. they had Bella Mackey on, who's obviously been on the podcast, and the actor Peter Egan was on as well. But I think Bella made the point that I'd like to make, where she said, you know, despite being a runner herself, she said, the onus is on the runner to be extra considerate in kind of confined spaces like parks. And importantly, like, if we all lost the right to go running at the minute because of some inconsiderate people, that'd be a real shame. And I think that's it, isn't it? It feels like a massive own goal for running some of this. Like, more people are running probably than ever now, and yet there's just some people just not really being considerate to other path users. I really do think the onus is on runners to move, really, because we're probably more mobile than other people using the park. It's easier to move as a runner as well, isn't it, than if you've got like a pram or something.
Even if you're not, even if you think that the person that you're approaching or going past is just as mobile, you're the one moving at pace.
Yes.
So the onus is on you to get out, move 2 meters to either side. And like, I don't know, adhering to a path, like, just go on the grass, or, you know, even just don't run, take yourself out of that situation and run, you know, diagonally across the space. Yes. Where no one is. I think that, you know, it's all the extra steps that might seem daft, and now is the daft time to do it.
Yeah, 100%. I think if you're causing panic in other people, even if some of that panic might be, you know, you might be close to being 2 meters apart and someone overreacts, and I think there is a bit of that going on as well. I just think we've all got to be extra considerate right now, right?
I think that even if you think people are overreacting, then if ever there was a time that you should allow that overreaction, it is now.
Agreed. And it's a minority, isn't it? But
yeah, of course it is. Yeah.
But yeah, interestingly, I've taken a different route, so to speak. So my take on this is, like, parks will always be nice, Ben, right? Like, you know, yeah. Victoria Park will always be a lovely place to run in. Parks across the country, they'll always be nice. My local park, Brockwell, is like a runner's paradise all year round. But I think the more imaginative runner doesn't go in the parks at the minute, because during the current crisis, lots of places that aren't runner-friendly are coming into their own. Take, for example, the South Circular, where I was running yesterday. So I was like, this is normally like just like clogged with traffic, right? And I'm not saying go and run in the middle of the road. I'm not talking a bit like on the kind of broken white line here. I'm talking about pavement.
Good.
This is actually an amazing road. It feels kind of like, wow, it's not. I've got all this road almost to myself. It's normally terrible to run along. But in the current crisis, these places are coming into their own. You know, head for the A roads, Ben. That's what I say.
Well, the major issue with running on a road like that would be pollution, and obviously it being disgusting to run along. That wasn't a problem.
No, I'd be interested to know what the air pollution stats are, but it's probably one of the few positives that have come out of this, is that air pollution levels have gone right down. But yeah, lots of places that aren't normally runner friendly, go out and explore them, because actually the window of opportunity to do so is slim, and the parks will be there waiting for you when this is over. We did have a letter, actually, from a reader, again, and unfortunately, this isn't about slating runners. Obviously, we're super pro running, but I think we've got to own it when people are doing stuff wrong. And she said that, this is from Amy McLaughlin from Richmond, and she said, "I am not a runner myself and normally have no issues with runners, but have been mortified in the current times of crisis, the number of runners I have seen spitting or blowing snot onto the side of the road as they run. I understand that these are habits that for some runners are hard to break, but I have an elderly parent who's in the vulnerable list, and I'm sure that you also know someone who is in the same vulnerable position. How difficult can it be to carry some tissues and spit or blow your nose into those rather than on the pavement?" Yeah, again, like, this is obvious, isn't it? But spitting's a pretty horrible habit anyway, but particularly now, coughing and sneezing and spitting whilst out running, it's given us all a bad name.
Yeah, and that's, I think, she, you know, Amy in her letter is that it's a habit and people may be doing it just as a knee-jerk reaction. So, you know, well, I would say I would sort of momentarily forgive someone who did it just out of, like, habit, per se. But yes, I think that it's more about a mindset. It's more about when you go out on that run, you need to kind of almost switch on a checklist of things in your head that are now acceptable and not acceptable. Because you do default. Like, it's super easy. Like, you've been running for 20 years or something like that. This is the first time ever that you've had to change what you're doing, probably, to this degree. So to sort of 20 years of habit to suddenly go, actually, I need to be super aware of my people's proximity and I need to not spit that bit of phlegm out, or, you know, whatever it is, or, you know, not just be ambivalent towards everything else. And I think that's you know, a checklist out just as you leave the door, just to sort of remind yourself of what's going on.
Yeah, and I think actually we can just go through some of that checklist now, that there's a piece in Run as Well, isn't there, about exercise. But yeah, some kind of etiquette points is stay at least 2 meters from other park users. If you don't know what 2 meters is and you're a football fan, it's the exact height of Peter Crouch. So if you can imagine being a Peter Crouch away from other path users, that's a good way of looking at it. This isn't from sort of the government, but I really do think the onus is on runners to move out of the way. I think we're moving at a quicker speed. We're probably more mobile than lots of the other path users. Let's just do the decent thing and move out of the way.
Yeah.
Also, we've had amazing weather, Ben, haven't we? Like,
yeah.
It's not hard to go on the grass at the minute.
No.
It's not like, it's ankle deep mud. It's not, is it?
No.
It's very, very fine and easy to do. Please don't spit or drop litter, obviously. Also, if you feel like you need to exercise more than once a day and you have a garden, I think that make use of that space for exercise and fresh air. And also, I mean, that might be enough on certain days for you not to have the need to go out at all if you've got a nice garden.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the final one, what I'll interrupt you is take hygiene precautions when you're outside. So wash your hands as soon as you get back indoors. And that's super crucial in terms of stopping the spread. But I think another thing to touch upon is that, you know, the government has stipulated that people are allowed out to exercise, but that doesn't mean you have to go out to exercise. Now, I think that sort of runners will probably say, and I would be part of that and be like, well, actually, you know, the physical act of moving outside is what, you know, is keeping us all probably fairly sane right now. But you don't have to, you know, being outside and doing a little HIIT exercise class in your garden if you have the space, it's pretty good. You know, I'd say that I'm slowly but surely becoming a bit of a convert to that. And I think as things ramp up in terms of, you know, controlling the spread and things like that, it's probably worth everyone considering that a bit more.
Yeah, agreed, mate. Agreed. I mean, I guess the flip side of all this is that it is great, isn't it, on some levels to see our parks being used. There's probably a lot of people who are coming into running actually during this period who haven't run perhaps ever or certainly haven't run for a while. And actually people being introduced to the mental and physical benefits of aerobic exercise. All that stuff is fantastic. And I think this has been a reminder of like how important physical exercise is for people and people coming out of the gyms and into the parks. I think there's lots of positives there. It's just about being considerate as to how you do it, isn't it? I think. Tell you what, Ben, shall we welcome our first guest of the week?
Oh, a two-parter, yes please.
Oh, yes please. Guest of the week. Here in the studio, guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
Could be a physio or a complete unknown. Welcome to the Runner's World podcast, Bradley. Thanks so much for joining us. Maybe if you we'll leave you to give yourself your own introduction this time.
That's fine. Thanks for having me. First and foremost, I am a physiotherapist by background. Currently working mainly in Formula One racing, but also with Team GB and in private practice as well. spent many years working in physio now, sort of working through hospitals and various different sports teams, into what I'm doing. What I'm doing now, I'm a big runner by hobby as well, sort of work with many runners and triathletes through my private practice too. I guess that's where I am now.
Yeah, you're a keen marathon runner, right?
Done a fair few marathons over the last few years.
And how is your own personal running going during this time?
I've actually got more time to run these days. normally, I'd be squeezing a run in before work or after work, but in these strange and unfortunate times, I'm spending a lot more time at home and away from the sort of normal work I would be doing. Plenty of time to run. So actually, my wife has been telling me to take a rest day, I've been giving the advice out enough, but maybe not taking it as much as I should myself.
The people you've been working with, Bradley, like the runners that you work with, do you get a sense that a lot of them are anxious that lots of their kind of hard won fitness is about to sort of fall by the wayside, and what is your advice around that?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, a lot of runners are very disappointed. Obviously, you build for many months to get to one point. I get the feeling that it wasn't so much their fitness that they were worried about in losing, because I think a lot of people have got plenty of time at the moment to be doing some running, as long as we're allowed out for our exercise each day, they can keep that up. I think it was more the, I'm really ready for this race. Am I going to be able to get ready for this again? Both from a physical and a mental perspective. I think we underestimate sometimes the mental component of that as well, and taking that away from people. And for both seasoned runners and also sort of new runners to the marathon and those that raise a lot of money for charity, that mental preparation to peak at one point, which is then taken away, can be a huge blow, and a lot of people struggle to find the motivation to do that again.
Yeah, absolutely. We've spoken to a few people now who, the sense of loss is very real in terms of the build up. Is the race day is the sort of accumulation of lots of effort, and I feel like that people, they are worried about form dropping off, and we'll discuss that. But yeah, it's definitely the missed opportunity to sort of prove yourself, I think, is what people are kind of coming to terms with.
Yeah, it's a nice way to put it, actually. Yeah, but you get that sense a little bit more than sort of the physical component at the minute. And of course, if people do stop training, then that's the other risk. So that kind of mental side can lead to demotivation and people just saying, "Oh, I've got nothing to work for now," and knocking it on the head. Then it might take a little bit longer to bounce back for some people.
Well, is there a sort of a curve now that to talk about more curves? But is there a curve now that can will people see? You know, after sort of say 16, 12 weeks of effort, the curve to drop off in fitness and form, it won't be that quick for people. I'm trying to sort of reassure, basically, but physical fitness doesn't diminish that rapidly.
No, for sure. I think if we take some of the science, some of the literature that we've got, you're looking at around 30 days before you really start to lose any aerobic capacity. Of course, that'll be different for everybody. So those with a stronger sort of running background will lose it a lot slower. and those that haven't been doing it for very long will lose it a little bit quicker. But even in those first sort of 30 days, you're only looking maybe 4 to 10, 12% of loss of something like VO2 max. And then beyond there, it will get a little bit quicker, but it's still not drastic. So even if you stop training today, you'll probably be good for about 30 days.
Well, so that's reassuring, especially as people are still able to get out and train. So that means that, you know, that drop off hopefully won't be significant. Is there a best use of time that we have now that people can, to runners in particular, can you know, is there the limited time that people have, is there a best way to go about doing it? Is it just to go running, or is this an opportunity for everyone to sort of mix it up a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've said to a lot of people now, and it's almost similar to the sort of post-season or off-season when we're working with some of our athletes. Competition is gone. So this is the time when, and particularly from my physio background as well, when you can really get all those niggles and all those injuries sorted, and lay some really good foundations to almost bulletproof the body a little bit. So my sort of first thoughts would be obviously keep running. I've said to a lot of people actually keep going through the cycle as you would do. So you'd be hitting, particularly if we were aiming for those sort of spring marathons like London, stick to your program, taper down a little bit. Your body's been working hard for the last 12 to 16 weeks. It's due that taper down, it's due that bit of recovery. And then you can shift into your next cycle for summer and autumn marathons. So keep running. Use the time to get rid of any niggles or injuries that you have or have had. And then really lay the foundations for them not to come back when you do go back to training. And then if you're not a runner, and I know many people... don't do this, but if you're not a runner that does strength and conditioning, then start to have a play around with some of these themes. Start bringing some S&C into your program. Work out kind of what you can do, what works for you, what you enjoy, and sort of almost plan to get it into your routine for when you come back to normal. We know that strength training reduces overuse injury risk by up to 50%. So for runners in particular, it's a really important component, which I often find myself banging the drum for.
Yeah, I think a lot of runners, it isn't something they kind of naturally get excited about. If it was something new to a runner and they're thinking about, right, I need to do a bit more S&C, how often do you think you need to do it? And what are some of the simplest things that runners can do around that?
Yeah, sure. So, again, going to the research, the literature, it tells us the ideal amount is about twice a week. That will give us enough stimulus to change muscle structure and give us that capacity and tolerance to the sort of load that is induced by running. In terms of simple stuff, I mean, when we get to strengthening, no exercise is a bad exercise, and it is important for runners to find something that they can enjoy as well, because as you quite rightly said, runners love to run, and often they run because they hate a gym environment or don't like doing that sort of activity. But for those that are kind of beginners to the whole S&C program, there would normally be a period of probably about 4 to 6, maybe 8 weeks of just getting a bit of baseline strength, working simple things like body weight squats, lunges, calf raises, some bridging, working the key areas, your glutes, hamstrings, quads and calves. And then from there, adding a bit of weight and increasing the resistance into some bigger movements. we've sort of, again, if we take from the literature what seems to work best, the four key exercises appear to be a squat, a deadlift, a lunge, and a calf raise. And actually going, increasing and getting heavier weights, and you obviously have to build that baseline first, but having heavier weights seems to give you most bang for your buck, i.e. shorter workouts, less time to work out during the week, but really nice improvements for running. And I think the final thing I'd say to sort of runners from there is, you know, it's not just about protecting from injury, which is really important, because if you get injured, then you're not going to be able to train. But there are percentage increases in economy of running as well. So strength training does make you quicker. And one of my physio colleagues was actually saying that one of the big differences between Kipchoge's first attempt at the sub 2 hour and his second attempt at the sub 2 hour, shoes aside, he spent a lot more time going through a structured strength training program as well, and I think that probably showed in terms of his fatigue and actually his economy of running, particularly as he got to the second half of a race.
I guess a lot of people are working from home at the minute, the vast majority of people, and that presents its own challenges, I guess, from a like mobility perspective, and maybe getting into sort of positions that aren't particularly useful for exercises like running. What would you say about that? And is there a way to kind of mitigate the impact of maybe being very stationary at the minute?
For the vast majority of people, it's probably not too different. Obviously, office-based workers, maybe if they used to have a bit of a walk into their commute, then it'd be important to keep that up. For example, my wife would normally get the train and then walk to the office. So at the end of the day, we go out for a little walk as the kind of commute home, or away from home and back to home, as it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly those not used to it need to sort of make sure, you know, they schedule rest breaks in their day to get up and move around, have a stretch. The main thing with sitting a lot more is sort of tightness in the hip flexors, tightness in the hamstrings, and making sure those muscle groups are focused on if it comes to sort of stretching or mobility work after the work day or during the lunch break. I think it won't be too different to people who are used to office-based work, and hopefully it'll give them a little bit more time without having a commute or having to rush back to the desk during their lunch break to actually do a little bit more activity and, you know, maybe squeeze one of those S&C sessions into the morning before work or into lunch break.
Yeah, well, Rick was saying, which Rick was almost boasting to me earlier how much running he's doing at the moment. So, you know,
an hour a day is more than I was doing previously. And I like say you save times and stuff, like, you know, there's no commute and there's no and there's other stresses that are taken out of the day by working from home. And so there are some positives from a running perspective that you can eke out of the current situation, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And Brad, I mean, you talked about people tapering now and using the current sort of cycle if they've been going through it, a training cycle, and sticking to it. So how would you sort of then advise, I mean, this is now predicting the future, but if people now were meant to be running a marathon in spring and it's been moved to autumn, and they may well have back-to-back races, how should they approach that block of training now?
Yeah, for sure. certainly getting a couple of back-to-back marathons in the autumn will be tough. Typically, it'll take the body sort of 2 to 3 weeks to recover from a marathon distance, both from, you know, sort of the musculoskeletal side of things, the muscle recovery there, but also just things like, yeah, your immune system and your digestive system and those sort of things, because you go through that extreme of the effort, they take some time to recover, but of course it can be done. And I think for people who are planning on doing that, they need to really think about, you know, not having any break in their training over the year. So obviously we need to cycle it so the body doesn't get worn out and we don't fall into overtraining. But following sort of get your taper in now, have a couple of recovery weeks just to give your body some recovery from the last 16 weeks of training, and as well as the physical side of things, give yourself that bit of mental rest as well. And I'm not saying don't run, but don't structure your running, you know. One thing I love after having trained for a marathon and run the marathon is to actually run without looking at my watch and not worrying about having to stick to a certain pace and actually just getting back to the enjoyment of running again, because sometimes that can be lost when we're so focused onto that training. So spending a few weeks doing that, but then shifting into training mode again. So we'd be looking, you know, sort of middle of May, end of May, thinking about starting to train already for the autumn marathons, and doing just a lot of slow steady mileage. We improve our aerobic capacity by increasing the number of mitochondria in the muscles, and to increase the number of mitochondria, we need to do sort of nice slow steady running to increase that muscle capacity to use oxygen, and to do that you've got to run more. So with two back-to-back marathons, you're going to have much less recovery time. So you're going to have that stronger aerobic capacity to be able to cope with that.
Oh, I wanted to ask, are you, you talked about sort of assessments while people are sort of recovering and stuff like that. Are you offering online bits and pieces now? How does the physical world of physio work from the remote working from home practice?
I think myself and pretty much every other physio in the country has shifted completely to online appointments, which is cool. It's a very new way of working for a lot of physios. I've been doing it a little while just because my travel demands with Formula One and Team GB are quite considerable. So for people to access me, I've been doing it a while, so that's cool. And actually, you know, for people who are a little bit nervous or a little bit worried about how physio might look in the online realm, you can pretty much do 90% of what you do in clinic in terms of the important stuff. So you can still have a good assessment, and a lot of what we do from a physio perspective, they say the subjective assessment, so the questioning side of things, gives you 80% of your diagnosis, basically. So from us having a conversation prior to me even putting my hands on and having a look, I'm going to know what's going on. And then that kind of objective assessment, where we're getting you to go through some movements, we're testing your strength, just kind of confirms it and gives us those avenues of where to work. But again, most of that can be done on video. If we wanted to look at your movement now or assess your strength capacity for a calf raise, let's say, we can do all of that. And then in terms of treatment and rehabilitation, you can have a good rehab program all managed online, or self-treatment techniques or taping. Again, it can all be shown on video and stuff there. So it's a nice way for people to still be able to access some form of medical or physio support. And as we said earlier, this is the time to do it, where we've got this hiatus of competition, and no one needs to worry about being fit for a certain period of time. You know, you've got time to relax and actually do your rehab.
Well, Brad, thank you so much for joining us. That was really, really helpful and insightful. And keep well, stay at home, save lives, all the important stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Last week, I spoke with Kevin Betts, the co-founder of virtual running club Run Things. In the current climate, virtual clubs and events are offering runners a way to experience a community without having to meet up physically. I was interested to speak with Kevin about the club and the role it has to play during the current crisis. Kev, thanks very much for making the time to speak with me. I'm much appreciated.
It's not a problem at all. It's an absolute pleasure.
Great. Well, I want to talk about Run Things, the virtual running club that you and Claire founded, because it feels like at this time when more and more people are kind of self-isolating, social distancing, that these virtual run clubs are going to come into their own a bit. But for those people who don't know much about virtual run clubs, could you describe, how would you define Run Things?
Cool. I think that's actually kind of two separate questions for me. So first of all, a virtual run club is it's exactly the same as a physical one, but with people potentially all around the world. So the Run Things run club has just about 500 members. I think we're on 497 at last count. Everywhere from the UK to Australia, New York, Bermuda, the lot. And basically, it's kind of, in the past, I think a virtual run club was about misfits, you know, people not needing or wanting to associate with a physical club, not wanting to go to the sessions and feeling a little bit isolated and out there. But now they've become these dynamic groups where people can sign up and know that they've got the full support of a standard running club because it brings all the same benefits, but without having to have the commitment and the rigidity of turning up to, you know, the track session on a Tuesday and the long run on a Sunday and that kind of thing. So there's more flexibility, I guess, there for people.
I'm interested in why you would want to set it up in the first place, Kev. Like, what was the motivation for setting up Run Things?
Well, Run Things kind of overall. So we encompass the running club itself. We also have some virtual running events, and specifically Run Things as a business was set up to encourage people who either have mental health issues or support people with mental health issues to make that link between physical and mental health. And for both Claire and I, we both set the business up together. There's a massive, massive link between the two. And we wanted to be able to kind of create a safe space for people from wherever in the world, from whatever background, to come along to feel like they're a runner and part of a run club, whilst also kind of, you know, having that knowledge that they're not constantly having to turn up to places. I think, you know, we really want to support people who mentally, you know, might have issues with anxiety or depression or you know, eating disorders. This whole range, this spectrum that mental health covers, is kind of encompassed within our club.
Are you doing anything sort of special during this period where people are socialising less and are inside more?
Yeah, we've had an awful lot of inquiries from an awful lot of people, actually. I think people are obviously physically isolated, but also psychologically at the moment. They're struggling to kind of, you know, grasp this concept that they might not be able to leave their houses soon. And as a very minimum, they're having to avoid the public, you know, getting at least 2 meters away from people. I ran yesterday and I ran outside because, ironically, the weather is absolutely gorgeous at the moment. And I ran further than I usually do on my same route because I was weaving in and out of groups of people. So we've had people get in touch saying, you know, are you still doing things? What are you doing? How are you doing them? So we've put on a suite of different things. And this isn't just for people in our running club either. So we have some virtual runs, and we were going to be having the runs anyway in April, but we've removed any charge at all now. So we want them to be accessible to absolutely everybody. So we've got a month-long challenge, month motivation challenge, where you can select a target to run 50, 100, 150, 200 or 250 kilometres in the month. And it all comes through the website at runthings.co.uk. And basically, if people run and they use Strava, they can link their Strava account and it will pull their data through and it puts them into a league table of other runners who are taking part in the event. So they see how they're doing, they'll be able to communicate via social media and all of that sort of stuff. So that's the first thing we're doing. We also realise that not everyone can run outside. Some people are actually isolating themselves. They don't want to go out. So we're, Monday to Friday, we're also putting on fitness classes. At the moment, I'm doing them all myself. I'm getting bored of my own face, frankly. So we are having some guest presenters come in as well. And at 12:30, lunchtime, every day of the working week, we're putting on kind of a half an hour get fit. You know, people incorporating their kids now that they're homeschooling, so it's relevant for them as well. And people don't need any equipment at all for that. They can just rock up, essentially put Facebook Live on, and so long as they've got a little bit of space in their lounge or their garden, they can take part in those as well.
It's great. I mean, I think with what Run Things does, it doesn't feel like, some of these virtual clubs can feel like they're kind of, they're commercial first, and they're also about helping people run. But I feel like with what you and Claire done, it's actually about chiefly giving back and supporting people.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if we were commercial first, our business would be an utter failure. We've invested an awful lot of money. The club is completely not for profit. Run Things as a business is a commercial venture, but the commercial venture gives 50% of its profits to mental health charities. And the other 50% of the profits are pumped back into developing the community that we have. So the Run Club is heavily subsidised by the business. Anyone who joins Run Things Run Club, they pay £25, and we guarantee that £25 is their lifetime membership of our running club. So they get a Run Club t-shirt, Run Club vest, and every year the only fee that they would have to pay is if they want to be affiliated to England Athletics or UK Athletics, and represent the club and get discount at races. But otherwise, for as long as they want to be a member of the club, once they've paid their fee, we do the rest for them. You know, we put on training sessions and meetups and all those sorts of things, and any additional money that the club has each year, we're reinvesting directly into the club. So for instance, we're having Race Angels coming into the club soon. Basically, we understand that a lot of people who are associated with our club have anxiety, social anxieties, you know, they don't like crowds, they're scared of first time races. So the club have said, if we have the money available and people can make a claim, then we will pay for a friend of theirs to run the race with them to reassure them the whole way round. So it's fully supportive. This whole club is completely to give back and to allow people who otherwise wouldn't feel comfortable in a running scenario be a part of it.
Have you ever been part of a traditional physical running club? And what were your impressions of that?
Yeah, I have. I've always dabbled, I guess. So I'm a marathon runner. I've run quite a lot of marathons and I'm still targeting a sub 3. So I've done a 3:01 and I was so close,
Kev. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was at Berlin a couple of years ago. I'm still not over it. And technically I did under 3 because on my watch, 26.2 was 2:59, but it doesn't.
That's not how it works, Kev.
Oh, I know. So yeah. And I joined my local club, which was Worthing Harriers. And they were brilliant. You know, they were absolutely amazing. Great guys. They went on regular runs and I got quicker and quicker for sure. But kind of, you know, I had some issues in my personal life. My marriage broke down and all of a sudden I couldn't go to the training sessions because I had childcare. So we are not saying that people need to give up their physical running clubs. You know, it's another option. And there have never been more options for people, I guess. And, you know, every club, like if you can go to a physical one, we fully recommend going. But if you don't feel like you can or you don't want to or you're not comfortable doing it, then there are virtual run clubs like ourselves, like Lonely Goats, like UK Netrunner. You know, we're not here to say that ours is the club for you. We're here to say that there are a lot of virtual run clubs out there for anyone.
Yeah. And it's, I really feel like these clubs can help people in the current climate, because it can feel quite oppressive, can't it? They're kind of being in a kind of lockdown situation and feeling like you haven't got a network that you can call upon.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've read some great stories. You know, there's the French guy the other day that ran a marathon on his balcony.
Yeah.
Did laps of a 7 meter balcony, you know. I think, you know, social media gets a lot of bad press a lot of the time, and rightly so, because, you know, we have to be accountable for the things we say and do on it. But at the same time, you know, you imagine this scenario that we're in, this unprecedented lockdown, potentially inside our houses for X number of weeks or months. Imagine it 20 years ago when, you know, when WhatsApp and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all the things that younger people use that I don't know weren't around. You know, people would have, they'd have gone loopy. So these support networks are there. We're hearing stories. And actually, you know, there's a morale thing going on where people are going, hey, look at this. This has happened. This is great, you know. And our running club is doing exactly that. We've got this community of 500 people who are in the Facebook group, Run Things Facebook groups, got over 2,000 people, and people are just putting out there this kinds of stuff they're doing, and that's not exclusive to running. And I think it's really good for keeping people buoyed and making people realize that, you know, it's not just them that are in this situation. I don't want to use the cliche that, you know, there's always someone worse off, but you kind of see some heartbreaking stories. You know, I've got very close people to me who work in the NHS. They're on the front line, you know. And it's daunting, to say the least. And if we've got time, and, you know, I'm effectively saving an hour and a half each day because I'm not able to commute to work. So I'm investing that hour and a half in doing extra fitness related stuff because that's what I know. And I think if anyone can use their expertise and get out there and offer those expertise wherever, and, you know, I'm going to be tapping up a friend of mine because he's a primary school teacher and I've got my 6-year-old at home. So we need to be able to kind of swap these skills that we've got. And that's basically, that's all Run Things is. It's a vehicle for other people to do that.
That's great. If people want to find out any more about Run Things, Kev, where could they go?
So they could follow us on Twitter, Instagram or Facebook at We Are Run Things. Or they could go to the website www.runthings.co.uk. They'll be able to look at, you know, the kinds of events that we offer. Biggest one is the run up to Christmas, which had 4,000 people taking part last year. Oh. They'll be able to listen to our podcast, second only to your own, of course. and they'll be able to, you know, do various other bits and bobs and just become part of a community, I hope.
Kev, that's great. Thanks very, very much for coming on the Runner's World podcast, and best of luck with all the great things you're doing with Run Things.
Thanks, Rick. Really appreciate it.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guests, Bradley Skeynes and Kevin Betts, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes and all of your favourite podcast app. Just search Runner's World UK podcast. Please give us a review if you've enjoyed it, and remember to tune in next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.